Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado, to today's episode. Cashio is one of the fastest growing spend management platforms serving businesses across Europe and the Middle East. They help companies issue unlimited virtual and physical corporate cards with customizable spending controls, automate expense management, and gain real-time visibility over company spend. In addition, their rewards ecosystem allows business to earn points and miles with leading global airlines and hotel loyalty programs, turning operation spend into meaningful business value. Cashio recently established its European headquarters in Dublin as part of its long-term European growth strategy. Sitting in front of me is Kevin Gallagher, the General Manager for Europe. He joined in early 2026 to spearhead Cashio's expansion across the continent as the UAE-founded spend management platform extends its reach into Europe and the UK. Kevin brings more than 15 years' experience building and scaling commercial operations for global technology leaders, and his expertise spans enterprise go-to-market strategy, team building, and strategic partnerships across regulated financial service environments. Kevin, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. Yeah. Wish I could do it that well.
Well, the clock's ticking on you. Right. I gave a brief description of the business and the products, but it's probably worth expanding on what is the value add that Cashio brings to the customers?
Yeah, so I think you hit the nail on the head with a couple of really important points. It's that kind of financial control layer that comes into businesses, right? And, you know, for here in Ireland, there's just a lot of businesses that don't have that, right? So they deal with the banks and then they deal with their accounting platforms and there's nothing really in the middle. And it's all a little bit manual and it's all a little bit expensive and there's not much value that comes into it. So that's where we sit. We sit in between the two and that's where we bring value to businesses.
And what type of businesses are you bringing? Are we talking about large scale or small scale or everything in between?
Well, sort of everything in between a little bit, right? Okay. Because the platform itself is very extensible, right? And kind of configurable to different kinds of businesses. And it's really any business that has a finance team and has people spending, right? Now, as a starting point, certainly in the Irish market, we are focused more around SMB and mid-market, and there's good reason for that. But the, you know, the success of the business in the UAE has been across lots of different industries and across lots of different sizes of businesses.
Why the start in the UAE and then the rollout to Europe? We tend to see the process in reverse an awful lot.
Yeah. Well, like the founders, Armin and Lydia, both been in Dubai for the last 15 years or so. And, you know, they have good reason in their background dealing with the lack of value within the kind of finance system landscape, right? There was also about kind of 5 years ago, a big push across the UAE to be more digitized in the kind of payment space that spawned a lot of businesses in this space, right? Probably about kind of 10 or 15 that came out. There's probably three or four now, of which Cashio has done obviously very well. But why expand then outside of the UAE?
Yeah.
Armin is Swedish. He's worked in Dublin and other places. Lydia's from Cork. And I think their intention was always to look at and build out a global platform, right? And that is what they have done. And Ireland was always kind of part of their, you know, their kind of medium-term focus, I suppose.
Okay. And then obviously it made sense then to have the headquarter here in terms of the European side of it.
Yeah, it made sense. I don't think it was, you know, just a formality, right? There was certainly a few places that they looked at. I think a big part of it was actually the IDA, right? And the IDA came over to the UAE and they met with them over there and they did a good job of explaining, you know, for what Cashio was looking to build outside of the UAE, why Ireland would be a good option. So I think there was a a little bit of historical influence, I suppose, right? But also, there needs to be that kind of pull aspect as well, and the IDA did a good job of that.
And is it a regulated business?
It operates in a regulated space. Okay. Yeah. So Cashio itself relies on partners, one over in the UAE, Nimcard, and over here we've had relationships with Stripe and with Adyen as well.
Okay.
And that's the issuing partner that we have for the corporate cards.
Okay. You do have some very big competitors, like the credit card networks offer something that kind of, say, in terms of their commercial operation. I met Visa recently, and that's what they were certainly talking about, that type of a business. So how do you differentiate yourselves from the competition, particularly when, you know, if you know, you're walking in, and as you think about Europe now and rolling out the business in Europe, you know, somebody's walking in with a Visa business card or a MasterCard credit or a Cashio credit or a business card, you know, how do you think you're going to differentiate yourselves from those and from some of the other big players that are there?
Yeah, it's a competitive space. You're right in saying that. But both MasterCard and Visa are actually more like partners, right?
Okay.
Because Cashio's cards issued by our partners operate on those rails, right? So that doesn't take away from it being a credit space, though, right?
Yeah.
And you look at the banks, and the banks obviously have cards, and they have card programs that are associated to different businesses, right? In this kind of spend management space, there's been a number of businesses in Europe that have kind of grown up here, right? Mm. There's businesses that have grown up in the US that are starting to come into the space.
Yeah.
What I would say is, right, like, you know, my background in different businesses, I've seen the kind of the winners, right, that are quite clearly that business that wins in that space or has won in that space. And I don't think anyone has won in the spend management space yet. You know, I look at some of those European businesses, and they're not the name that kind of comes to not really, right? And so, you know, when I was looking at Cashio and I was looking back at this sort of spend space, I think really there is, you know, there's a market to be won here in Ireland, there's a market to be won wider in Europe as well.
And what do you think, you know, when you think about spend management, what is this unique selling point for the customer, you know, when you're going to, because, you know, the infrastructure's there and whatnot, but What is the problem you're ultimately trying to solve, I suppose, with the customer in this?
Yeah, it's, can I do three? Is
yeah,
that all right?
Yeah, there's many
three,
you
okay?
Like.
Well, it's because, so, you know, who are the customers, right? The customers for us are, you know, within that SMB and mid-market space, a lot of the time we're still dealing with the business owners,
okay,
right, who still have a big influence in the operations of the business, right? It's them, and it's always the office of the CFO, the finance team as well. So if I look at that finance team, right, what are the things that sort of not necessarily keep them up at night, right, but certainly keep them away from the tasks that they'd probably rather be doing? Administrative headaches, right? So I think, you know, on average, teams in Europe spend about 73 days a year on administrative tasks, right? So, like, block that out on your calendar, yeah, right? Fairly substantial. So what Cashio looks to solve for those teams is much easier control around how money is spent in a business and how it's reconciled,
okay,
right?
Okay.
So it's the first part being around, you know, that control and visibility and speed at which you can get cards, virtual or physical, to people. You can make sure that they have the right controls in place for them. And then secondly, you know, how is it that we make sure that all of the spend that's going through those cards is reconciled in the right way, has receipts attached to them? We know where the spend was and by who, and we can do that easily into the softwares, the accounting ERP softwares, the SAPs, Oracles of this world. So I think that's the two, right, on that kind of finance side of things. And then for the business owners, the managers of the business, right, this is all very necessary spend that we're talking about here. You know, the monthly outgoings, the expenses that you know, that their employees are doing, you know, a huge amount of that has absolutely no reward or value attached to it. And Cashio's other big selling point is Cashio points, right? And this is a rewards program that we have created. And what it means is that all of the spend that goes through the cards has a rewards aspect to it. And the way I see that is, it's not, you're not spending just to get rewards, right? You're spending your absolute necessary spend, but you're getting something
extra as a result, right? Yeah, I understand. You're not spending to get the rewards, but it's nice to get the reward because you are going to be spending anyway.
This is it. And for most Irish businesses, that's just not something that goes hand in hand with the finance partners that they tend to have.
Yeah. I suppose the other aspect that a lot of people listening might not realise, the whole idea of a customizable spending control. Like when they think about their credit card, the only spending control they have is they have a limit that they can't spend any more then, right? But when you get into the corporate side of it, it is an ability to literally program and say, this card has only been used for hotels and airlines. This one is only able to use for fuel. Is that how we're talking about in terms of spending controls and how customizable they are?
That's exactly it, right? And, that's a really good, easy example. You can only use that on this kind of thing. Yeah. Businesses aren't that easy, right? Yeah. And multiple people need to be able to pay for one thing, or there's multiple people that are doing that one thing at one time. So when you start to bring in kind of more matrix layers into this, having something that you can actually really control, and you can limit the card, you can limit the department, you can limit the type of spend, you can limit the amount of spend on it.
Yeah.
That gets pretty, pretty useful for these teams, where a lot of the time it's really not that situation.
Yeah. And I suppose then when you're dealing with small and medium sized businesses, they don't have a big finance department that are able to sit and go through everybody's credit card statement and go, oh, that's fuel, that's a hotel, that's a this, that's a that, that's a the other, right? So this by having these controls in place, it almost becomes de facto, well, anything on this card is fuel, so I know that. Anything on this card is such and such, and I know that. And when it actually comes to doing the finance part of it, it's much easier, particularly for smaller operations.
Yeah, and it's that sort of like helping hand of, a couple of recent examples where we've had where these small businesses may have a monthly spend on a Meta, for advertisements. Yeah. And they don't realize that, the Christmas advertisement spend that was up, 2x on what the normal monthlies is still going on. Mm. Right. And retrospectively, we're looking and we're seeing we spent an extra 40K on that.
Yeah.
And that's very detrimental to some of these businesses. Right. So if you have that kind of control in place, even for those small businesses, that they are aware of these things in real time, huge amount of value there.
All right. I suppose at this point now, this is very much a scale-up story as opposed to a startup story, right? And your history, you've been on the scale-up side. So I suppose what have been the key learnings you take from your past journeys that you ultimately are going to bring and deploy on the road ahead in Cashio?
Yeah, so my journey, with Workday, I was there for best part of a decade, mm-hmm. right? But the business itself, by the time I joined, was still kind of 2,000 people strong worldwide, and there was a couple of hundred people in Europe at the time. There was always a nice kind of feeling that we were a smaller part of a bigger organizations, right? But still, lots of processes in place that we could follow, albeit that we could, look at certain things, look at certain markets, look at certain verticals, etc. With Trulioo, that was moving into another North American business, very early stages, kind of on the ground, greenfield commercial role, right? Mm-hmm. Where, again, there was an established business that was there. There was some people here in Europe in the market, much more free rein to that was part of the role, right? Go and make that successful. Cashio is going kind of further back toward that, startup mentality, most definitely, right? The business has grown in the UAE from about 40 people this time last year to over 150, right? So it's really on that kind of stage of the journey. But here in Ireland, right, it, you know, the first person on the ground, right, you know, when I joined, it coincided with all of the, you know, the troubles that started in the UAE kind of about 3.5 months ago.
So my own, Jeff, what am I doing?
things like that cross your mind. But it was what it probably ended up doing was made me have to get to know the business a lot better, how the business works, right? Not kind of superficially, but like really
proper nuts and bolts.
Proper nuts and bolts, because I had no way of contacting, you know, anyone at times. You know, the onboarding was all very much set up for in person, you know. So while I was trying to join the business, I was also having to establish us here, right? Bank accounts and office locations and payroll, etc. So I think as much as it was nice to have kind of learnings to kind of call upon from previous roles, this has been a whole new experience.
So do you see this more personally for yourself? Do you see this more as an entrepreneurial role as opposed to a scale-up role?
I think there's elements of that. Yeah, I think there's elements that most definitely. And you know, that's a little bit of what drew me to the role, right? Number one. And then I think the founders, Armin and Lydia, have really, you know, kind of pushed in one way to really make, you know, how we go about this different to the UAE, because they understand that they are different markets and we need to operate in different ways. They're also quite practical, I would say, right, in saying that, you know, we absolutely are going to go and win in Europe, right? As a lot of people say, we're going to do it from Dublin. Again, a lot of people say, but they understand that that takes time and you need to win in your home market and you need to learn lessons, instead of saying we're just going to go and wholesale attack everywhere in Europe, where a lot of businesses tend to fail. And I've seen aspects of why that happens. So I think there's elements of it that are still kind of startup / scale up, and then, you know, very entrepreneurial aspects that I need to have as well.
And when you look at the core technology, how global is the technology in terms of at its core, but then it has a kind of a localization overlay that obviously UAE, then there's a European localization, and then even within Europe, I'm sure there's intra-region localization that ultimately will have to take place.
Yeah, there's core foundations are quite global, I would say. And the nice thing is, coming into a business where we've already had success, right? There's already been businesses that have organically come onto the platform in the UK and across Europe, right? Albeit that we haven't been kind of going directly at them. So is the business able to support that? Is the technology able to support those business? Absolutely. As we kind of get more into the market and get further into conversations with more complexity, is there aspects that need to be kind of regionalized? There absolutely is. And that's sort of part of the, you know, the journey at the moment is, there's lots of things we need to do here, right? What are the most important ones that start to get us traction?
Yeah. And is it about getting kind of key logos on the presentation, in terms of a few key accounts, and go, actually, do you know what? If we can get proof, it's not even proof of concept, it's actually, you know, because it's not a new product. It's been in the UAE for long enough and things like that, and people kind of know it. But is it about that kind of getting some key customer logos on under your belt and pushing it?
Like, you know, social proofing here is always helpful, isn't it? Right. I think the real thing that we are looking to do as a starting point is, you know, is getting logos, getting people using the platform and getting sort of real life feedback on what they need from the platform. We certainly have our own thoughts on what that is, right? But I think, you know, there's that aspect. And, you know, my background has been a lot of kind of enterprise sales and long focus kind of commercial sales. And you have to do those two things in parallel, right? To my mind, when you're coming into a market, it's not just you can go and, you know, try and get as many logos as possible, mm-hmm. right? But I think sooner rather than later, you also need to be able to support that more complex use case.
Yeah, the so sooner share, it becomes share a wallet then of or penetrate and share a wallet of existing rather than just getting new logos.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And also, you know, as I mentioned, there's competitors there already. There's established players there. You need to find ways of you know,
unseating them, if you will.
Yeah, at least, you know, gaining parity, right? If not looking and finding the USPs that are going to work. So, you know, I think doing the two at the same time has always been my kind of thought process.
And do you think it's a help that you are not dealing with a brand new product? So there's plenty of use cases in the UAE, and plenty of people using the system and things like that.
Yeah.
But also B, that when you come to the Europe and the UK market, it's not a new concept either. Spend management is not a new concept. So you've not only got a, you know, you're not in the worst case where you're trying to create a market, if you will, because it already exists, but then you're also not trying to create a product and create a market at the same time.
Yeah, I think the benefit of knowing who your kind of target audience is, them understanding to a degree what it is that you're selling, 100%. There can also be aspects of that can be kind of harder to unpick,
yeah.
right? Like we spend management, this is what we use, right? Or this is, and we've had hardship with that in the past, and therefore it's, you know, we're fine. Mm. And having to kind of unpick that and you know, educate and try and bring those people around to understanding why, you know, what you're kind of offering will offer more value. Pros and cons, but overall I'd say yes. The fact that we are, you know, already established, that we can lean on that we're not kind of selling vaporware, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely been a help for me.
And do you think, you know, how much of it, when you look at the market now for Europe and the UK, how much of it is proper white space in that, you know, it's not that the customers don't know what spend management is, they just haven't done it, and how much, you know, so in terms of that addressable market, and then, you know, it becomes difficult. The harder part is going head to head with other players that are there, because you have got to kind of unseat them. They've got to kind of make a mistake for you to be able to unseat it. So when you look at that market, addressable market, that is proper white space, that somebody's just not using it right now, you know, is it substantial?
Yeah, it is substantial, quite honestly, right? Especially when we think about that kind of SMB to mid-market space, there's still a huge amount of those businesses. You know, businesses that, you know, have quite a lot of, you know, monthly outgoings, right, for the size of business that they are, and are still very reliant on, you know, a relationship with a traditional bank, or even with the neobank, right? And then they have their accountant, or they have their accounting software, and in the middle, you know, it is still very Excel based. Mm. It's very manual. It's people doing a lot of the jobs, and you obviously tend to think that the bigger a business is, and the more revenue maybe that they have, or the more people that they have, means automatically
there should be systems there, but there probably isn't.
There's still a lot of them that don't have it, right? Mm. And there is a mindset, I would think, in Ireland as well, right? That, you know, we have those relationships, and certain parts of them are great. We have a lot of trust with that bank, and we've good kind of, say, you know, support from a customer perspective. But, you know, it's not that easy to get something new off them, or replace something with them, or, you know, not overly fast, as an example. And we have, you know, high tech partners, and yeah, they're much better because all of the stuff they're bringing out is new and is exciting, but gosh, they're a little bit riskier than what we're used to. That's really what we're trying to do locally here. And it's a big part of kind of what I looked for with Cashio, was the ability to build a local team. Yeah. And local team that, you know, that will have, you know, commercial side of things for now is our kind of main focus. And you know, and that will expand into customer support and different operational elements. But the kind of next 12 to 18 months is building our product and building our engineering facility here. And that to me is really important, right? That the business is investing in building locally.
Yeah.
Because that's to my mind where you get a lot of businesses that come in and say, we're going to...
It's only a boilerplate that I'm kind of operating on.
Yeah. We're going to win Europe, but we're just going to win Europe with the team of salespeople. Yeah. And it's, you know, you just don't get the local nuance. You don't get what you need to build, right? And that's what we need to be able to do, is understand what people want and be able to support them locally and be able to build for them locally as well.
I suppose the other thing, you know, the last couple of weeks, if I taught you anything, like, you know, with the Iran conflict and things like that, you know, disruptions could happen very easily given the nature where it is. And as you said, you can't be relying on an engineering team in the UAE for a customer who is in Europe, and you go, well, I'm very sorry, but I don't know whether there's anybody in the office at the minute because there's bombs flying over there.
Well, this is it, yeah. And I always remember that with with Workday, right? You know, that we had this kind of mindset that, you know, the business was headquartered and still is over in California. But for whatever reason, if that business did go down, yeah, right? And it's not just wars, lots of other things. We had the ability within Dublin to support it with, from an engineering perspective and a QA perspective, as well as, you know, all of the other functions that you'd normally associate with that kind of European headquarter, international headquarter. And that's, to me, that's paramount to actually understanding and investing in a market.
What's the culture at Cashel? You know, you kind of you're a new novel recruit, right? So you can kind of I suppose this is a two part one. What do you know in terms of your indoctrination that you've gone through, right? What would you say? And I haven't been in other big organizations. What do you think is the culture there now? And you know, in time, how will the European culture differ or rhyme to what it is in the UAE?
Yeah, good question. And do you know what? Like with what happens, literally, you know, Saturday, everything kind of kicked off over there. It was meant to be going over on the Sunday, right? So you then get to join a business that is operating probably at its most honest. And what I've seen in there is a huge amount of resiliency, right? And a kind of attitude of, we'll figure this out, right? And, you know, definitely what kind of drew me to the business when I was speaking to them over the course of kind of end of 2025, moving into this year, was that they really seem to, from leadership down, operate with a lot of integrity. And that's what's kind of rang through, I would say, albeit that the integrity is now more based on having to operate like that as opposed to wanting to operate like it. So, so it's been really interesting to join a business when, as I say, you know, there's very little facade in terms of how people are doing things. You know, I kind of joined the business because that integrity is hugely important to me, right? I think you're probably looking at in Europe and, you know, having a slightly more mature fintech market than in the UAE. So what I'd like to hope is that over time, you know, even though we're the smaller of the two, we can bring some of that, you know, that maturity in terms of how we operate, the structure that we operate, the way that we're looking to do it. But actually, I think there's a lot of similarities there. Mm. I really do. You know, how they operate with that kind of, you know, we'll get on with it. We'll figure it out. We'll be honest about it. I think there's very Irish ways of
A more broader one for you, because obviously, you know, your work day, your career and things like that. Do you think a global company can really have one culture? You know, a multi-site global company, do they really think they can have one culture?
Do I think they can have one culture? So what I really liked about there is that, you know, companies always have their values, don't they? And they'll list them, and some of them will have three and some will have eight, yeah, right? And I think as much as they can sometimes be lip service, right, if they are the right words and they're built around what the business does, then I actually think that there can be a central way that a business operates.
It'll have some credibility or in terms of how it approaches.
Yeah, and like, you know, what are those kind of things, you know, operating with integrity or being very customer focused or what, like every business can say those. Mm. But if they're actually, you know, instilled from a leadership level into all the decisions that we make are based on these things that are part of how the business operates, then yeah, I think, you know, even cross-culturally those things can apply. When you start getting into, you know, there's 8-9 different words associated with us and we don't really know why, and like all of these decisions that we make have no real relevance to it, and you know, we go and we say we're gonna, you know, charge into this market, but we're only really doing it for the, you know, maybe not with the right reasons or with the right investments, then I think you have different cultures, most definitely, and you're probably not trying to link those cultures together.
Mm. Now, you're obviously at the early stage of the European business, right? So I have a question I always talk about, hiring talent or develop from within, right? You're going to have no choice but to hire talent. You don't have anything to develop
myself.
Within,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I as you see how you're going to run the business, would your hope be that you will ultimately be able to get people in at the kind of ground level and create that career profile for them that they, you know, they can be in Cashew for the next 15 years and have a career that involves moving up to the ranks?
Yeah, that's certainly the intention, right? And we've been very... We've approached those first hires in exactly those ways in terms of how we've marketed the roles, the words that we've associated with the roles, the kind of attributes that we've looked for in those people. Mm. And 100%, right? You know, these guys are taking a chance, right? A lot of the time in joining this business at this stage versus, you know, where a lot of them have come from, yeah, right? And so I would have a lot of kind of... you know, it almost take it kind of personally that the people that you're bringing in, you have to look at them as the people that are going to grow with the business for you, right? You know, and the amount of investment that I'm putting into those people at an early stage and vice versa, the amount that I'm expecting from them, you know, that to my mind is how people maybe do look to skip a couple of roles and get to those kind of roles sooner. So certainly, yeah, my intention is develop from within. Yeah.
When you get the critical mass going.
When we get the critical mass
now,
going.
This is one now, and again, it's you know, it'll be less from your current role, but in your past ones, you know, that, you know, when it comes to hiring people, that you bring them in and because they look, they're the best of what they can do, and that's great. But sometimes the best of what they can do is they create a whole load of collateral damage, right? And you know, the best way I would describe it is, you know, what do you do when you've hired a talented asshole, right? And that question, you know, because ultimately, you know, as you build out that world, you know, unfortunately, that is a big risk for you. You know that you're you know, you're probably hiring people that that aren't necessarily known quantities to you personally. You know, you can see what their status is, you can see their history and things like that. So, you know, when you look at that, and it's probably a bigger risk for you now in this point that something like that could happen. Have you thought about how you're going to deal with it
So, you know, a lot of my background has been kind of commercial and sales focused, right? And I think in those roles, a lot of the time it's you know, it's night and day, or should be, that a person, you know, hits their targets or doesn't hit their targets, right? What I've always tried to bring in is that, you know, there's peaks and troughs that tend to happen in all kind of salespeople's careers, right? And you know, what levels that out is, what are those people doing outside of their role to better themselves, to better the business, right? And that means that I'm not just looking at, you know, that kind of, whether they hit their number or not. That's not the kind of people that I look for. That's not the kind of person that, that I tend to be. So my hope is, I suppose, that I'm focused less on just the person that might turn out to be that asshole that just does that job and that's it. But, you know, I'm more inclined to go with the people who I see are naturally curious, that are team builders, that are looking to better themselves. That means that, you know, they miss a quarter here and there, you know, so be it. The likelihood is they're doing a hell of a lot more for the business, right? So I probably haven't thought about what I will do with those assholes if I do manage to get them. But I certainly, I'm not, it's not always just looking for that killer. Is not my kind of way of going about it.
Again, the as you think about it, you're rolling out this business, right? You know, as you start getting successes and things like that, or even when you're trying to establish the business, there's a real risk that you kind of get distracted in terms of going down, you know, cul-de-sacs that you shouldn't really, that you just kind of go, but like, you know, if we give this client this extra bit, it'll get them across the board, but it really isn't core to it. So how do you keep in the tram lines, I suppose?
Yeah, very good question. And I was saying to you, I was listening to the chat that you had with Mark, and one of the things that he mentioned that he's probably learned from is the importance of focus, right? And so if I look at our business versus the UAE business, which is much more established, and there's more feathers to their bow in terms of what they have there, I think it's incredibly important that we're able to focus in on what we're trying to do in the market with, you know, what we're selling to the market. And I kind of have that same mindset in the other aspects of what we do. We're pretty clear on what needs to be done now that is, you know, materially important to where we are in 6-12 months time, right? And so, you know, there's that focus. Does that focus waver at times because of this shiny thing that comes in, or, you know, or distractions that happen? Absolutely it does. But I think we've done a decent job as a starting point, at least, of saying this is where we need to spend most of our time now if we are to get to, you know, 50 people in 12, 18 months time, which is a great goal to have, great to be part of, but we need to do these things first.
And you just mentioned that about the goals, you know, there's that idea there, like, you know, if your dreams don't scare you, you're not dreaming big enough, right? So, you know, what are your dreams as opposed to UAE management's dreams for the European and UK business?
Yeah, it's like, you know, part of joining and part of investing in my time and whatever else, my emotional state in this business is the fact that there is such opportunity there, right? And there's opportunity that's also based off, you know, success, right? We have something there that we can emulate. We have a business over in the UAE that's market leading over there. So we have a blueprint, right? I think that. And then there's this idea that Ireland is our kind of launch pad for Europe. And certainly for me, having the opportunity to build that team out here in Dublin, it wasn't something that I was able to do in Workday. It wasn't something I was able to do in Trulioo. And so that you know, investing in local talent, developing that local talent, that to me is a big part of maybe not my kind of you know, what success gets put down on paper, right? But for me personally, if we can have success and we can do it in that way and I can be part of that, that's hugely important for me.
What personal characteristics do you think are going to be most important to you as general manager as you set up this business?
It's, you know, probably some of those characteristics that I said the business are kind of displaying, right? You know, resilience is an important one, right? Because you know, as much as the business is kind of set up in some ways, it's very much a startup here, right? And you do have kind of daily things that you need to concern yourself with for good reason, right? And things that go wrong and whatever else that might be, and so, you know, that that plus that focus element, right? And I think that's something maybe I'm still trying to figure out, right? It can be a little bit unfocused and at times, but for me, those, I think the other thing that's important is that you have to be able to try things and fail and learn from them and move on quick, yeah. Right? And being able to kind of hold your hand up and say that, like, we're doing it for good reason. Mm. We're learning from it and we move on and we try again, right? That to my mind, in this GM role now, being more all-encompassing, there are plenty of things I just don't know, right? Mm. I just haven't had the experience in doing them before. If I'm not trying things, I'll kind of never learn them, right? But more important that you're kind of failing. Well, maybe not more important you're failing, but maybe more important
you're learning. Let's just say.
Yeah. That one definitely.
Yeah. Do you obsess about the small things?
At times, yeah, can be probably not in everything, right? And this is when I'm focused, I think, yes, and when there's a million things going on, I kind of use my better judgment on things and sort of hope that I've made the right decision on them.
It's funny, the best answer we've ever had for that question is somebody said, I focus on the important things. They might be small or they might be big, but they're always important.
I think
it's a good way of putting it. Who do you or who have you sought advice from over your career?
Yeah, I've been lucky, right? My father was the, I don't think it was the name of it at the time, the chief revenue officer for Baltimore Technologies, right? And so he has a lot of experience in kind of global tech
sales.
I'm old
enough to remember that, by the way. There's not a lot of people who won't remember that, but I remember it.
Yeah. And so he's a great sounding board to have and, you know, someone that I can kind of always rely on. I'd say as well, I've kind of kept a good network as I've gone through, right? I think that's a really important thing for anyone in business to do. It sounds a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah. Don't make enemies.
Well, don't make enemies, but also invest in keeping up with them. That's probably the thing that I've learned. And so I, you know, certainly in this role now and what is a much more expanded kind of, you know, control aspect of what I'm doing, the different things that are part of growing Cashio out in the market. It's meant that I have sought out a lot of different people for advice in different ways, and you know, having that network or you know, asking someone who knows that other person, right, is important. But yeah, I would say I've been lucky in that there's been, you know, kind of always people there willing to lend an ear.
And in the background now, is fear of failure a driving force for you?
Look, you always want to succeed in what you do, right? Mm. I think that's, you know, kind of table stakes. The fun thing, as I said, is that we are doing something with a good blueprint that's there, right? Do we know exactly how we'll succeed, when we'll succeed, how we'll succeed? No, we don't, right? So is there a fear in that, you know, there's parts of that we're going to fail in? Yeah, but I think much more excitement, right? And much more, you know, this is new and this is different and getting the chance to kind of do that here is... The fear is probably not the emotion, thankfully, that I'm most concerned with.
And what about, you know, how is it going to work in terms of autonomy from the UAE in terms as you roll out this business?
I think you know, Armin and Lydia have been fantastic in terms of how much time and effort they've put in. That, you know, they've been over here a couple of times over the past couple of weeks even, and you know, as part of the kind of launch that we had in the market in May. As much as possible, I think we need to draw from what works over there. But you know, this is...
Recognise it as a different market and therefore...
Recognising that as a different market and they understand that. And so, you know, there has to be autonomy in different things that we do, and probably as we move more into that you know, the likely kind of growth plan that we have, more of that autonomy comes over in terms of the kind of people that we're hiring, the kind of roles we're bringing in, and therefore, you know, what is it that we can be autonomous about? So you know, for me at the moment, I don't need to make every decision. I don't feel like that's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
We have lots of different things that we need to do, and at the moment, you know, one of those main things is growing and kind of getting substantial in the market. But that kind of longer term plan is absolutely, you know, that this is a fully fledged business over here.
Is it beyond the possibility that at some point the European UK business is bigger than the UAE business?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
What happens then when you're talking to the bosses back in the UAE?
This is a great story, right? That you know, it's one of the first businesses from the Middle East that has come that direction, right? And so as much as, you know, we think about Abu Dhabi and Dubai and how forward they are in terms of plenty of things that they do over there, there isn't that many businesses that come back this way, right? Is this a bigger market than over there for what Cashio does? It absolutely is. Is there a lot more for us to do? Yes, but yeah, I you know, my head of sales counterpart Emma over there, you know, would probably be listening at some point. But yeah, of course, we want to surpass it.
Yeah. More generally, when you look back in your career, you know, how did you know when it was the right time to leave a role or move on to the next stage of your career?
I got some great advice actually from the former CTO of Workday, David Clark, who said to me, and he doesn't remember saying it, which is even better, because it was stuck in my head so much. He probably says these things all the time, that you kind of work in 4-year cycles, right? And I spent the best part of a decade at Workday, and after 4 years there, would I have done another 4 years? Absolutely. It was a great place to be. I was learning so much. But when I got to that kind of 7 years or so in, no, I didn't, right? And, you know, grass is always greener, but then you have to start looking and saying, well, if I'm not going to give that amount of time to somewhere, then I need to start looking at what else is out there. And you know, I've been lucky in 15 years, I've been in 3 different organizations, right? So I think staying within an organization, investing in an organization, as opposed to, you know, having all these 4 different, you know, big companies on your LinkedIn profile. I know what person I'd rather have, right? But that was it. That was something poignant for me to say, like, that kind of 4 years is a big investment of time, right? And probably, again, at my last business, I was there for nearly 5. And I looked and I said, kind of at that 4-year mark, do I see myself here? I probably don't. And again, it's a good time not to jump ship, but certainly to see what else is out there.
Now, if you're not allowed to use that piece of advice for this next question, but what advice would you give to young people today?
I would give that advice, right?
Yeah, because that can be part A, and then you have to give me a part B now.
I think what I have probably found, and I'm going to say my age certainly here, but you know, in looking at the right people for these first roles at Cashio, been looking at people that are probably a little bit outside of my network or my age group, right? And, you know, people that have invested time, right, in those first roles that they have, it does matter, right? It does matter. And so what I would be kind of saying is, and, you know, I'm probably talking about people coming out of college here in their first couple of roles, you know, you're not going to find the perfect role immediately. And, you know, I don't know, it's probably a lot harder now because of how much positivity people tend to see on platforms and things like that make them think that everyone else does.
Yeah.
But that's still the 1%, isn't it, right? That does that. So I think whatever role you're going into, you know, just like really investing in it, right? You know, the idea that you'll find the perfect role immediately, I think is wishful thinking, right? But to invest back into a business that is investing in you, to invest in the people that are in the business, right? I'd always say to people that, you know, your territory, timing, talent, three things that are meant to be what's good about, you know, a commercial person, internal networks trump that every day, right? And so, you know, people that go from a very early stage and start investing in that internal network, that to me is long-term success. You're just giving yourself a better chance. Sure.
Yeah. Are you fast or slow when it comes to decision making?
Am I fast or slow when it comes to decision making? Like, it sounds slow now because I didn't answer straight away. I think I try to use my better judgment and back myself a little bit, but for bigger decisions, I'll take time over them, especially if I haven't done it before. And I'm doing things a lot the moment that I haven't done before. So, you know, I think you can be both, and I think that's okay.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the decision making, are you data-based or gut feel?
I try to be data-based. I really do. Yeah, I really do. And sometimes there is just not enough data, isn't there, right? Yeah. So, and sometimes I would even say with the data, I still go with what I feel can be right. And so, again, I think I do a little bit of both. I'm not giving you a great straight answer.
You're all right. I don't think there is black and whites in these ones. So when you think about your management style going forward in the new business, are you going to be centralized or decentralized? Are you going to kind of trust people and let them go, or not quite micromanage, but...
I think you can be kind of centralized and not micromanage. So, you know, for us, Cashio in Dublin, we're in the office, right? You know, we are a small team at the moment of, you know, that is an extension of a startup business, right? And so being in the office, learning from one another, getting perspectives off one another is of paramount importance. And I don't think that is the same as micromanaging someone. I just think it's what needs to be done in order to be successful at this stage. What I would love to be able to do is to kind of take the reins off that.
Yeah.
I think we're probably a little bit off that right now. But I would say probably like management style is all of the jobs that I'm bringing in, all the people that that are doing those jobs, I like to think that I'm not telling them to do something that I wouldn't do myself, right? And that's probably the way that I try and put myself into it.
There's no point in hiring them to do a job and then doing it yourself, right? You know?
No, but certainly having the ability to know what it is that you're asking someone to do, right? And probably empathizing with the situation if it's not something that everyone wants to do. It's important that you're not just, dictating rather than delegating.
Yeah. Do you hate losing or love winning?
I love winning more than I hate losing. Love winning more than I hate losing. Better feeling.
Yeah. And do you celebrate your wins then?
Try to. And you know, it is going to be important for us to do that, right, as part of Cashio in Europe. You know, it's a great situation to be in, as I said, right? But it's tough at times day to day, and it's important that you kind of empathize with the situations of others when they're investing in the business at this stage and they're doing things outside of their role, probably doing more than what they did at their last place. And so certainly understanding the effort that people are putting in and being able to celebrate, that's really important to me.
What do you think will be the hardest part of the job, being the boss?
I'd like to think there's not going to be too much of it, but it's when things aren't going to plan, right? You know, that's like at this early stage, there's a lot of kind of, at least some of it comes down to what we think is going to happen, right? And we can try things and we can fail and we can, you know, switch things around a bit, but at a certain point, you know, that becomes a lot more, this is what needs to happen, right? Yeah. And, you know, that's probably the part that, you know, no leader sort of enjoys, right? Mm-hmm. But if that turns into, you know, for whatever reason. Yeah, I, you know, we've been really, we've been really focused on making sure, as I said, that we've hired the right people. We've also been focused on not like going gangbusters and bringing in 10 people before we have the right go-to-market strategy, the right product market fit, right? So I think, you know, as much as possible, bringing in people that are the right people that we can develop and grow into roles, that we limit the chances of those people churning for whatever reason, for our reasons or for their reasons, right? But inevitably, there's going to be some of that. And yeah, not a nice part of being the leader, but a necessary part.
Right. Black book time. Let's see what we've got. Again, no idea. Here we go. All right. This is going to be an interesting one for you. I wouldn't say it's controversial, but it's going to be interesting, right? Who's the most famous person you met and what did you like most about them, but also what did you not like about them?
Who is the most famous person that I've met? I'd like to think that I've met some famous people. So when I was a kid, this is going back a good while. When I was a kid, I met the Argentinian football team. It wouldn't have been Maradona age, would have been kind of Gabriel Batistuta kind of age. So that gives you a sense of what it was. And they gave me a pendant of the, what they switch at halftime. And I got that as my, I spoke to them. They didn't understand me, but I got the pendant off them. And so I have no bad word to say about them. They gave me something and didn't really know who they were, but that's probably it. And I can't tell you what I didn't like about them.
Yeah, that's all right. It's fair enough. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Kevin Gallagher. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.